The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's Good Friday. Thanks for being with us. Chris Cartman, ASUDevils.com. We're at the midpoint of the season for ASU. He'll be with me in about 15 minutes. Jimmy Vaccaro will go to Las Vegas. Always good to catch up with Jimmy Vaccaro, who is with us every week on the show. And, of course, with Jimmy, we'll break down all the angles on the National Football League. What are they saying in Vegas? Guys, you got your money. It's Friday. You want to throw a couple of nickels down on some of these NFL games, some of the college games. You need the insight of Jimmy Vaccaro, 39 years in Vegas with the Lions. That is coming up with Jimmy. That'll be at the bottom of the hour. Eric is out today. So it's myself and Jared, and we're just going to pound right through this and do our thing, which is a lot of fun. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino. I saw where it's supposed to be in the 50s and 60s during the day and at night. Beautiful temperatures, 30s and 40s up in Pine Top. Why not head on out around the state to the Honda Resort and Casino? Pine Top Lakeside area, it's absolutely gorgeous this time of year. Sholo. It's the Honda Resort and Casino where there's great food, great fun. Pull down the slots, watch some games. Try to win that biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament. It continues on right now. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. So Matt Williams is going to take the job. The big story of the day in Arizona, as we sit here right now, is Matt Williams. Matt Williams is going to be hired as the new manager of the Washington Nationals. A source close to him this morning told me that while it's not done yet, that congratulations are most certainly going to be in order. Matt Williams, a 15-year player with the Diamondbacks. One of my favorite stories in doing sports here over the last 20 years in Arizona involves Matt Williams at a time where everybody thought he was a grump. When he played for the Diamondbacks, there were people that thought he was a grump and an ogre because he wasn't the easiest guy to deal with. Some of these spoiled media guys wanted their free lunch, their free dinner, and want to go down and have the players just say, "Oh, hey, how's it going? Well, I don't know. I'm old for my last 30. How's it going with you?" It was interesting to me. There are guys in my profession that I hate dealing with Matt Williams. I don't like, he's a jerk. It's 162 games, okay? And not every day are you going to be really comfortable doing what you do. One of the first jobs I did around the Diamondbacks, I hosted their pregame show and their postgame show. 162 games, day after day, week after week, and they lost over and over and over because it was year one of the team. It's pretty cool to be associated with a team in year one. I'm walking into the ballpark in August. It's like the 45th game in 46 days, some ungodly number. And I'm walking in, and all of a sudden, as I get into the ballpark, I start tearing up. I have no idea why I'm tearing up. And by the time I get to the bottom of the stairwells, I'm about to go out on the field, I literally am wiping tears from my eyes. So I'm sitting there on the bench, and Matt Williams comes over, and I said, "I had the strangest thing happen to me." And he says, "Oh, you've finally become a ball player." The stress of day in and day out, no Saturdays and Sundays off. You don't know when the game is. You know when the game's going to start. You don't know when the game's going to finish. And I'm just some podunk broadcast guy doing something. I'm not a ball player doing it every day. Point of that story is the stress every day to go out and do it every day for 150 games, 160 games. And you're going to say to me, "Yeah, they get paid a lot of money." I know they do, but they still have to go out and perform. I get it. Yeah, their decimal point's a little bit farther over than mine is. Not bitter towards it, I get it. And I saw how hard a guy like Matt Williams worked. We did a fun bit in 1999. The Diamondbacks were better, were going towards the postseason. They had Luis Gonzalez in, they had Jay Bell, they had Matt Williams. They were all playing terrific. Fans didn't get the whole deal of all-star ballot stuffing. And it's a bit that I did out in California for years where all-star ballots would go unused. I'd get them. We'd have ballot punch-out parties. Fans would have fun. Players would be into it. You don't do it just to say, "Hey, we got a ball player." No, if they really, truly deserve it. There's nothing worse. It's like these guys that they have the best in broadcasting or the best in restaurants or the best in whatever. And people will say, "Go to my website and please vote for me," over and over and over. I will never do that. I'm never going to say, please vote for me because I need you to tell me that I'm really good. No. And the same thing with these ball players. So I did this ballot stuffing deal, and Matt Williams ended up making it in. I'll never forget this. I finished doing my show. I'm again down in the dugout. Matt comes over to me, sits down. He looks kind of grumpy. He's got a bat in his hand, which is not a good thing because I'm defenseless down there, and I'm a pretty easy target at 6'8". And Matt's just sitting there, and he's looking at the bat, and he doesn't even look over at me. He says, hey, that was pretty cool what you did for us, Jay, Gonzo, and Matt. They ended up making the All-Star team through the vote. You didn't have to do that, but it was pretty cool. And he got up and he walked away. I thought he was going to whack my head with the bat, but I'll never forget that. There are going to be those that talk about Matt Williams and buying HGH in 2002 and that he was included in the Mitchell Report. I think that now we're in an era where some of these guys that were taking stuff, and I don't know this from Matt. I don't know if he took it because he said he took it and then he went off of it. I don't know if he took it for the reason of, I think this can make me better. I think that this will help me out. And when he started taking it, he said, I'm not going to take this any longer. There are some people that will say he was a user just as guilty as McGuire and Sosa. Yes, he took HGH. However, I felt as though that for him to say, look, I took it, I didn't like what it was doing, and I got off of it, I'd rather have that. And there's going to be people that will hold it against. And there's going to be people that say, and I've heard all angles, he wasn't being truthful. He tried to do it in a quiet sort of way. Well, yeah, all those guys did. And I'm to think that there weren't others on that Diamondbacks team that went to the World Series that weren't using juice. Everybody was using stuff of some sort. I'm not going to say every ball player, but every team had guys that were trying things out. So, yeah, he bought HGH in 2002. That's a fact. He was included in the Mitchell Report. That's a fact. Does it mean he shouldn't be a manager of a Major League Baseball team? No. That's ridiculous. That's absurd. Is he going to have to address it at some point? I'm sure that he is going to be asked about it over and over and over. To me, that stuff has already happened. That's ancient history. It can't be changed. People make mistakes. They screw up. I've screwed up. Last time I checked, I've screwed up on a few things. And I've had to move on. Matt Williams is ready to be a manager. I think he's going to be a terrific manager. And I think he's coming into a situation with a team that has a lot of talent. He has a lot of talent on that team. Bryce Harper, are you kidding me? Gets to manage him and try to keep him on the straight and narrow and others. There's some terrific players on the team. Strasburg. And I think that it's a great move for a guy here in Arizona that I'm pleased for. I know it's the football weekend, and I know the Red Sox Cardinals game last night isn't going to set any number of records. The TV ratings, again, were miserable last night. St. Louis beat Boston 4-2, a role reversal from game one. I like the fact the Cardinals can stick out their 23-year-olds. They had three guys pitch last night that were 23 years of age or younger in the World Series. That's pretty cool. The game itself, game two of the Cardinals-Red Sox World Series, drew a 9-5 overnight rating on Fox, up 8% from Tigers-Giants last year, down 8% from Cardinals-Rangers in 2011. The Red Sox, you would think, would do a great number. This year's Cardinals-Red Sox matchup is the second World Series in history to earn a single-digit overnight rating. Not good. Not good. By comparison, the first two games of the Heat-Spurs NBA Finals were higher than what we saw out of the first two games of the World Series. So it's among the lowest rated ever, but it's two games in, and let's just see how this plays out. Football people love to hear that baseball doesn't have great numbers. All sports sit there and say, well, look, at baseball's dying on the vine. I watched last night. I wasn't riveted to it. I am tired of Tim McCarver. Tim McCarver and Joe Buck have worn out their welcome with me. They have. I'd rather have two fresh voices, and Joe Buck is, I think he's in his late 30s. He just, with Tim McCarver, it's just painful. On the college football front, we're going to talk with Chris Cartman here in a couple of minutes from ASUDevils.com about ASU and where they are at this point of the season and the things he likes, the things he doesn't like. I'll spar with him a little bit. U of A plays at Colorado tomorrow night. That's a must-win game for Rich Rod's team. And also in state, I know this isn't big breaking, shocking headlines or is going to get a lot of viewers or listeners, but NAU's having a very good season in Flagstaff. NAU plays at Cal Poly tomorrow night. There is a good college football game on tonight. Boise State plays at BYU. I love watching BYU play, not just because they crush Texas. I like their style of play. And Boise State is, again, it's Boise State. This should be a wide open game. This should be a 52-51 game. We like those. Tomorrow, I will make time in my day. You know, on Fridays, we always talk about I'm your day planner. I'll go through that later on in the hour. There's some things this weekend that you're definitely going to have to plan out so that you don't lose her or tick off your kids or just wake up on Monday and say, what did I do with myself? But there's some definite sports angles that you need to check out. UCLA at Oregon being one of those. I'm interested to see how Alabama plays against Tennessee. Tennessee was ripped by Oregon. Tennessee's playing better. Tennessee will go down at the end of the season as the one team that's played both Oregon and Alabama. The Cardinals game on Sunday is interesting to me because I don't know if they can figure out a way to take a tight end out of a game. They haven't to this point. Today, the Falcons let it be known that Roddy White's not going to play. The Cardinals, if you would have told me at the start of the year, you're going to get Atlanta, and there's not going to be Julio Jones, and there's not going to be Roddy White, and their defense is going to be beat up, and Steven Jackson's not played a whole bunch. And oh, by the way, the game's at home. I'd take that. Heck yeah, I'd take that. But look at the tight ends. 24 catches, 2 touchdowns in the last 2 games for Tony Gonzalez. I am sure that for him, put me on a private jet, not even on the team charter, because I want to get to Arizona because I've seen how the Cardinals have been torn up by Jimmy Graham, Vernon Davis, Greg Olsen, Zach Miller here so far this season. Tight ends have absolutely destroyed the Cardinals. There's no other way to put it. They've embarrassed the Cardinals. Carson Palmer, 13 picks. Is he going to be straight and narrow on Sunday? Carson Palmer gets the, from Bruce Arians, the quote, Carson is my guy. For those of you that want him out, I happen to not be one of those, but I am one of those that says you have to start looking at 2014 very closely in the draft because I don't believe Carson Palmer is going to be anything more than a serviceable backup. And will we see the debut of Ryan Williams this weekend? Rashard Mendenhall missed a couple days of practice out with a toe injury. Some games I want to get to over the weekend. This Rydell story. So we talk about concussions. We've been talking about concussions for 2 years on this show. So now the helmet maker, or one of the helmet makers, the helmet partner with the NFL, is no longer going to be the exclusive helmet partner as they continue to distance themselves on the concussion issue, and this thing is not going to go away, and it's only going to grow. Get into that. Magic Johnson weighs in on Doc Rivers' decision to cover up the Lakers' 16 NBA championship banners. Magic is dead on right. Get into that as we move on, and much more. But on the other side, we shift gears. Arizona State Sun Devil football, Pac-12 football, recruiting, the top defensive player that I've seen this year committed last night to Texas A&M. Another great one leaves the state. What's happening here? And how's ASU's recruiting class shaping up? What's going on inside the program? Chris Cartman, ASUDevils.com. He joins me next. I'm Brad Sussman.
Like our Facebook fan page for the latest news from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/pros2preps.
Segment of the Brad Sussman Show is brought to you by the very good people at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. And when I say it's all about you, Santan Ford says, hey, we're coming towards the end of the year. You need a car, you need a truck with the holidays coming up. Holidays are right around the corner. Can you say in full confidence that you're driving the vehicle that makes the most sense for you? That car, that truck, you're going to make that trip over to California, wherever the relatives are, up in the northern part of the state. Maybe you have to drive through snow. Have you been thinking ahead, guys, to the holiday season right around the corner? A month from now, it's going to be Thanksgiving, and you're driving that car, that truck. General Manager Tim Hovick is a huge sports fan, a big supporter since day one of what I've been doing here. When I told him my vision, he said, I'm in with you. And to this day, he checks in and says, what do you need, Brad? I said, I need this, I need that. And I asked Tim, what do you need? And we get through it together. That's at Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Chris Cartman now joins us, ASUDevils.com. Publisher, editor, halfway point of the season for ASU. Before I get into this current season. Last night, in my opinion, the top defensive player that I've seen this year in the state of Arizona on the high school level commits to Texas A&M. ASU was in the final running. Quaylen Cunningham told Jared Cohen over here at Pros to Preps about that. He goes to Texas A&M. Why did ASU lose out on him?
Bottom line, Brad, is his dad is a legacy, played at Texas A&M before playing in the NFL. The longer that Quaylen's recruitment played out, the more that you thought that ASU had a legitimate possibility. He told us several times he really, really liked the double backer position, the way that ASU uses Carl Bradford. It's pretty unique. And that was probably the thing that was the main draw. But at the end of the day, the legacy aspect was just too much for him to pass up. And I do agree with you. He's probably the best defensive prospect in the class. I had a chance to watch him against some of the best players in the country in Chicago at our Rivals Five-Star Challenge this summer, and he more than held his own.
And so they didn't get the best offensive player either, or is that up for debate with Kyle Allen, the quarterback at Desert Mountain, based on the season he's had? He's going to Texas A&M as well.
Well, I think that's a little bit more up in the air. There's three guys that you could legitimately make a case for between Kyle Allen, and then Jaylen Brown is a terrific prospect, the receiver from who's committed to Oregon from Mountain Point. And then you have another really excellent offensive player, Mark Andrews, Desert Mountain receiver, may play tight end in college. We'll have to see about that, but he's going to Oklahoma. Those three guys are really closely grouped, in my opinion, and ASU didn't get any of them. Part of that is just happenstance. Jaylen Brown, stepdad, played football at Arizona, and even though ASU really aggressively tried to be in the picture early, he really had no interest. With Mark Andrews, he's got a family member that goes to Oklahoma. They've been really big fans of Oklahoma for a long time, and that was the main impediment. And then I think Kyle Allen, he just kind of fell in love with what Texas A&M did with Johnny Manziel and the big-time environment that college football is down in the SEC. So absolutely, ASU continues to struggle at securing some of the top players in-state.
ASUDevils.com, that's a great place for content, and we've partnered up with ASUDevils.com throughout the season with Chris Cartman. It's always good to have Chris on the show, and you can read some of his content over on our site as well, and we do some video work for him too. It's over at ASUDevils.com. He's part of what we do here at Sports 360 AZ. I'm just wondering if Todd Graham is going to get to a point, because over the summer when I emceed an event up in Sholo, had several of the coaches that they kept telling me, Brad, we've got to figure out a way to close the borders, close the borders, close the borders. They haven't been able to do it, and it's been an ongoing topic for years, 15 years, 20 years, as long as I've been here. They'll get the DJ Foster, but they won't get others. Do you think he's going to get worn down by this part of the recruiting process and just say, you know what, we can't do it, we just got to go to Texas more?
I really don't. I think there's no way that you're going to be able to just throw your hands up in the air and say, well, we can't recruit Arizona, so we're not going to do it. It's a losing proposition from a community buy-in standpoint, because these are the people that you also are trying to get to come to your games, to watch your game on television, to support you in the community. So you can't do that. And there's no reason why they should do that, because it's frankly easier to recruit local guys. It's easier to get them to come to your junior day events, to your camps, to your games and things of that nature. So they're going to continue. I mean, Todd Graham doesn't really know how to do anything halfway. So he's going to continue the outreach. They've done a very good job with coaching clinics. They have the billboard campaign, as you know. I think that was considered to be a multi-year investment, not just oh, we're going to use this and it's going to lead to us getting more 2014 commitments. I don't think that they think that way. They've a lot of kids who are juniors and even a couple sophomores in the state. And as we talked about on your show previously, Brad, this is a multi-year process. I think Graham's, one of his main focuses right now, I think, is getting the stadium project, underway, so that can maybe change the way that ASU is perceived culturally in the community. And I think if he's happy with that, given some of the other factors, such as his wife loving it here and having her family here and I think it's going to be tough to pry him away. And I also think that that is the type of thing that will eventually resonate, coupled with the discipline, right? You know, with Dennis Erickson, it was like, why do we want to send our son to play for your undisciplined program? And now ASU is one of the most one of the best teams in youth penalties in the country. And you know, they have good schemes on offense and defense. And they score a lot of points, 50 points in four games this season. There's a lot of things that are trending in the right direction, but these things are very big picture type things that we're talking about.
Chris, I'm you know, we're at the halfway point of the season, and over the last 3 years, you look at what would happen after about mid-October, where the program would go into a tailspin, they'd go through a losing streak, they'd play themselves right out of contention. What makes you believe this year will be different than the last 3 years?
Well, it's what I was just kind of touching on a little bit. The Dennis Erickson's teams, when the rubber met the road, those guys weren't there because they didn't have the discipline. They didn't hold each other accountable. Those guys weren't studying film, you know, through all hours of the day and the night. Taylor Kelly said this is the closest group he's ever been a part of at ASU. They spent more time on their own, doing the team building things, doing things together, such as going bowling or just gathering for film until 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. And I think that's what matters at the end of the day. Coupled with their a team that doesn't turn the ball over very much, especially Marion Grice and the running back, they almost rarely fumble, and then they don't shoot themselves in the foot with penalties. So I think those are the things that win football games. At the end of the day, they have some special teams problems that really could be a problem. That's been a thorn in their side all season. If they can address some of that. I think the rugby style punting has been better the last couple of weeks because it's hard to return those types of punts. Their freshman kicker is looking good. He's leading the Pac-12, 11 straight field goal attempts made. That's been a problem, as you know, in the past with ASU.
Yep.
And some of these close losses and that have really crippled the program. So I just think there's certain things that are just trending in the right direction. They obviously have to show that they're ready and capable of winning on the road. And that's this next test against teams that are not as talented as they are. So they have to beat Washington State, and then they should beat Utah, even though that's going to be a tougher game, because they're frankly more talented, but that doesn't always necessarily lead to a victory on the road.
Yeah, I mean, there's five games left, and you have Oregon State here. The game at UCLA, people are already talking about. I'm not there yet. I think at Pullman, anything's possible, but it's not within your division. The game at Utah is not going to be a gimme because I think Utah at home, it's a whole different deal up there, and you don't know how the weather is going to be. The UCLA game, that stacks up, and the U of A game here. Oregon State down here, if it's up in Corvallis, they'd be in trouble. We saw that last season. I guess on my end, it's anything to me short of being in the Pac-12 title game at this point would be a disappointment on the season, because you can say, yeah, we're going to the Valero Bowl, we're going to San Antonio, we're going to the Sun Bowl, we're going back to the Holiday Bowl. That's the same old stuff. And this team has too much talent, in my opinion, to be settling for, let's just go be happy going to a bowl game.
I agree. And I agree with you totally. And more importantly than that, I think Todd Graham agrees with you. Todd Graham has said repeatedly, an 8-win season is not good enough.
No.
We're a better football team.
Yep.
Our goals are to be in the Pac-12 South Championship, to, you know, try to even win that game and play in the BCS, you know, play in the January Bowl. And you're not going to move the needle substantially unless you do that. There's no doubt that if you end up playing in San Antonio or San Diego, it's not good enough.
But I would tell you, though, Chris, if you end up in those places but you lose the Pac-12 title game, because they're so far down right now in the numbers that I don't see how they're going to be in BCS range unless they just go on a phenomenal run and win six in a row, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the Pac-12 title game and you end up losing, you've already taken the program to a whole nother level than where you were a year ago. That's my point.
Right.
Mid-major bowl, I don't want to hear this, well, we went to San Francisco, we were in Vegas, we went to San Francisco, and now we go to the Sun Bowl. That's what I've heard for 15 years.
Right. If you end up in one of those non-BCS bowls, but you played in the conference championship, you've moved the needle.
Yep.
And that's what needs to happen. And especially right now, you have an opportunity to capitalize in your division because USC is in a transitional period. So that means that you have the ability to get some of those guys. And they actually, one of their visitors from last weekend was a USC commit that's now decommitted. USC, DJ Calhoun, a standout linebacker. And there's weakness in other places in the Pac-12 where historically they really haven't been. Like Cal is down right now. Washington, people are, there's starting to be whispers about what's going to happen with Steve Sarkisian.
He's going to get fired. It's not a whisper. It's I'm saying it very light. He's going to get fired.
Okay. Well, you heard it first from Brad. That's the point though, is that there's some of these programs are just not doing well. And you have to be able, there's a finite amount of talent, and you have to be able to get this piece of the pie of that talent to be successful in the region. And ASU has an opportunity to do that right now. There's a lot of things that are coming together, but they have to capitalize, they have to win on the road, as you said, and they have to put themselves in the Pac-12 South Championship.
Are you going out to a game tonight?
Yes. You know what, I haven't decided which one yet, as a matter of fact. I'm definitely going to be going.
A little plug, we have 3 games on our site tonight. Three.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm actually doing one of them as a last minute for Jared Cohen. I'm going to go do Basha and Chandler. Just I love being out on a Friday night. So
I was thinking about Basha Chandler myself.
I may see you there. Come on by.
Okay, sounds good.
Be well. Stay well. That's Chris Cartman with us for a couple of minutes. ASUDevils.com. And, of course, you can check out his content. Very good content. He also provides content for us as well over on Sports 360 AZ. Up next, up to Vegas. All right, so there's the college stuff, even a little high school. Up next, the NFL, front and center. Jimmy Vaccaro, what are they saying in Vegas about the games this weekend? The wisest, the wise guy, Jimmy Vaccaro, college football, pro football. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's go to Vegas now. Brad Sussmat with you, Sports360AZ.com. A lot of fans in the Valley that check out our site and listen to the show across the state. On White Mountain Radio, always good to be on White Mountain Radio and the good people up there. Jimmy Vaccaro now with us. And look, it's a 3 to 4 hour drive to Vegas for you guys here in Arizona. And there's a lot of games this weekend on the college front, the pro front. But there's also Tower of Power that I see at the South Point Hotel and Casino and Spa. Who would not want to see Tower of Power this weekend? Hi, Jimmy.
You're showing your age, young man, but I'm right along with you. That's a great group.
okay, let's get into the NFL here. So what do we have, 5 double digits, 6 double digits this week? What do you see in there in the NFL this week, Jimmy?
We're separating the good from the bad a little earlier than normal. We usually wait around week 12 or 13 where you start to see the things pop up here. But they're priced it for the right reasons, kid. What can I tell you? San Francisco, Jacksonville, which is obviously just a mismatch, or even though they're playing it in London. You have to make these things high enough to make the general public pay a figure that maybe they normally wouldn't. 16.5 in London, and a lot of things can happen when you're over there. They play on that soccer field. They chew it up pretty good. That's why you see such a low total with a high point spread, the total only being 41. So, what can I tell you? The Denver game, interesting game there. That game, it is priced right. We opened the game Denver, 13-point favorite over RG3 is coming to town. But money on the dog there, and I think the money is shown for the reason what we all saw. Peyton, who's a class kid, doesn't open his mouth even when he's hurt. I think he got banged up pretty good last week in that game. And even though they held him out of a practice or two, I think that's one of the reasons you saw that this number coming down here. So, and obviously the Packers and the Vikings, what are you going to do with the Vikings? I mean, that game was a folly Monday night, even though they played a helpless team also. So Packers are a 10-point favorite there, and naturally the Seahawks just keep rolling along. And the Rams, the Bradford injury, notwithstanding, it still would have been 8.5 or 9 if he would have been in the game, but the Rams are going one direction, the Seattle's going the other direction. So you have this week where the good are meeting the bad a little earlier in the season than anticipated.
What about Cincinnati at this point? You look at the Jets, and Jimmy, the Jets are, it's the Geno Smith roller coaster. They go up and down with Geno Smith, and you look over at Cincinnati, and is there a full buy-in on Cincinnati at this point of the season? What's the views in Vegas, Cincinnati, and the Jets?
A little less with Cincinnati because Andy Dalton is a little like Geno Smith, too. You don't know what you're getting from week to week also.
Yeah.
The Jets are a 6.5-point dog, but money has shown on the Jets, and I expect it to keep coming in there for the reason that you just stated. First of all, Brad, it looks like Rex Ryan is putting his team out in front as opposed to him with the media.
Yep.
They surely have nurtured the young Geno Smith. He's playing well enough to be controlled, but the overlooked part there is this Jet defense has been spectacular. If you look into some of the stats, you'll be amazed at what you saw. And the biggest one is I don't think they've let anybody rush over 100 yards so far this season. Last week they rattled Brady pretty doggone good. You haven't seen Brady get that rattled that often in his career, and he made a huge play when they should have. So the smart guys, I can't tell you, already jumped in, taking some of that early Jet money. I think even the general public might fall on it come Sunday morning, but I think the Jets are in a pretty good spot here and are a much better team. Bengals, yes, we thought they'd be a little better. They're playing well, but you never know what you're getting from one week to another, especially with Dalton.
What does it mean when Dallas is relevant and in first place?
It means a little bit. It doesn't mean what it used to be because, as we've talked about now, you know, Denver, Seattle, San Francisco, those teams have taken the major spotlight. But it's always good to have Dallas there. You know, even last week there was a major move on the Eagles against the Dallas Cowboys, and all the wise guys jumped in there, laid the 1.5, 2, 2.5. The game got up to 3. But when it got to 3, the Dallas Cowboys backers who've been back in there for years stepped to the windows and quietly got an easy win there. So, yes, I like it when Dallas is more relevant because it creates more buzz. And what we're into now anymore, kid, we talk about it over and over again. We're in an entertainment industry also for as much as everything else. It's good to have a team like the Cowboys at least coming forward. I want the Cowboys to make the playoffs because it does make a difference when you're down to just a minimum amount of games.
And their game against Detroit this week, your view on that one?
Yeah, well, some guys jumped in early and laid the 3 with Detroit. I don't know why they were that hasty jumping on Detroit minus a 3. We went to 3.5, and immediately there was just an avalanche of buyback on the Dallas Cowboys plus the 3.5. The game is settled 3. That's right where it should be. And where it goes from here, I would suspect there'll be about a 60-40 split on tickets favoring the Dallas Cowboys.
Before I let you go, Atlanta and the Cardinals down here.
Well, I hate to say it, boys, you're in rough this weekend. I'll be rooting my little behind off for you because we've had nothing but Falcon money, and understandably so. Even though the Falcons haven't lived quite up to billing here, your guys, I don't know what to tell you, pal. You're in deep there. I'll be rooting for you, believe me.
Hey, before you go, so the NBA season starts next Wednesday, and I don't know if you've got them in front of you, but we have an awful basketball team down here in Phoenix. And I mean, just a dreadful train wreck of a franchise. But at the same time, Jimmy, the Lakers are probably going to be awful as well. So when you're looking at around the NBA with the season starting on Wednesday, what's the view in Vegas on the Suns, first of all, and then we'll get into the Lakers?
The Suns have their win total in front of me. What do you think their win total for the year is?
20... 20?
Stop right there. 21.5. Pretty good, kid.
Yeah.
Now, how about the fabled Lakers, the team who obviously for years and years and years, we have them listed at 34.5 season wins. That's sacrilegious, isn't it?
34?
34.5, the Laker total. Now, yes, first impression is what you have just given, and most people do when they say, the Lakers, how can, I'm imagining you're thinking, Jimmy, how can they be that low?
No, I'm thinking that high with Kobe being
that high.
I'm thinking more like 29, you know? I mean, I'd take the under on that one.
All right, kid. Well, like I said, when you come down here to get your tickets for Tower of Power, you can come over and get your tickets on the Lakers. On the quickly, Brad, before I let you run, the NBA, you know, we book preseason. We book the side total and the money line, just like during regular season. And you'd be amazed so far the amount of people who like to come up, bet their 50, 100, 200 on the NBA preseason. So we are in full gear here. And quickly, the Red Sox Cardinal. Pick 'em World Series from here. Red Sox Cardinal game tomorrow. Pick 'em. So looks like this thing should go 7.
Yeah, fans heading on up from Arizona to Vegas. There you go. Swing on by South Point. Look for Jimmy Vaccaro. Jimmy, appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Goodbye.
Jimmy Vaccaro, always good to catch up with him. I heard that Goody wasn't going to be with us today, but I just got a text that he got out of a movie. So we're gonna have Goody at the movies next, as we do on every Friday. I don't know what movie he saw, but Goody at the Movies is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. You can always follow me on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. And, of course, sports360az.com. Yeah, we do all the sports stuff, but look, I'm all about you guys having a life, too. You know, I got a few more sports things. I always like talking to Bill. Bill was hobnobbing, and I forget, I think it was it Samuel L. Jackson that called him Sunday morning, this past Sunday morning, and he sent out a little tweet on that. I'll find out from Goody. He's next. And now, straight from a movie screening, I have no idea what he saw. It's always good on Fridays. Goody at the Movies, Bill Goody Coons, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. What'd you see today?
I saw Frozen.
Can you talk about it? Usually you can't talk about these things.
I've got a little bit about it. It's an animated Disney thing. It's really good. it's a musical, and after about 10 minutes, I thought, I don't know if I want to sit through a musical, and bam, by the end, it was like, this is really good.
And it comes out when?
Not like forever, the end of November or something.
November, yeah. So the way
we get these early sometimes so you can talk to people, you know, who are in the movie or whatever.
Who's in it?
Kristen Bell is the main person, and I like her. She's good.
Yeah? And that's as much as you're going to give me, huh?
You enjoy it more the more you discover on your own. How about that?
Okay. You had a phone call last Sunday morning, I saw on Twitter, from who was it? Was it Samuel Jackson?
It was Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman called you last Sunday morning. And so what time? So I have to envision this. What time of day does Morgan Freeman call Bill Goody Coons?
He called me out at about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, something like that.
Are you in your fat pants, scratching yourself? Your hair is everywhere, or are you dressed for success because you know Morgan Freeman's calling you?
All my pants are fat pants. I was probably wearing gym shorts and a t-shirt, something like that. They can't see me. It's not like the Jetsons yet, you know, in a way. We didn't do like the FaceTime thing or anything. And I got the idea while he's obviously, you know, you got that voice that is like tremendous. I put that on Facebook and Twitter that, you know, I talked to Morgan Freeman, and somebody said, you know, isn't God busy on Sunday?
Right.
You know, he's got the voice of God, but he was not, I mean, he wasn't unfriendly, but he did not, you know, if he didn't like a question, he just said yes, no, and moved on. You know, he wasn't there to, like, socialize. He's done this a time or two, you know.
Did your caller ID say Morgan Freeman, or did it say God?
No, it said, like, show whatever hotel he was at.
Okay, so he's at a hotel, and the way this works for people that don't know, he's in a hotel, and he has a list of about, what, 5, 10, 20 people that he has to call.
Oh, at least. There's a couple things I'll do to try to set people at ease or see what they're going to be like. One is, if it's something like that and it's fairly quiet around my house, I'll just say, you know, thanks, I know that there are better things to do than talk to reporters all day Sunday or whatever. And the way he responded to that was by saying, and yesterday, and tomorrow. Like, oh, okay, I get it. But the other time, a lot of times, as you and your listeners know, my house can be kind of wild and loud and stuff. And so I would often say, before we get started, I just want to let you know that before we're done, you might hear the screams of small children or barking of dogs or whatever like that.
Or the bird. I hear the bird every week in the background.
The bird won't be quiet. But I think that gives me an exotic sound. You can always kind of tell by the way that somebody reacts to that what kind of conversation you're going to have. And I think the best response I ever got to that was Keanu Reeves said, outstanding. And I just thought that was cool. But like somebody like Matt Damon, somebody cried, and he's like, what's that? And I said, and the only thing I could think of on the spot was to say that we're out of cookies. I don't know where it came from, why I said it. And he said, oh, man, I got four daughters. I know what that's like. What are you going to do? You know, and then we had this, like, big discussion about, you know, like, taking care of your kids. And it was, you know, so sometimes it's good, sometimes it isn't.
And you get him on the phone, Morgan Freeman, and you have 5 minutes with him, 10 minutes with him, as much.
Ten minutes, but they blew about 5 of the minutes by calling the wrong number for 5 minutes. So.
Okay, and so there'll be a point where they'll just cut you off, or he just says, "I'm done with you."
Well, thankfully he didn't. The drill usually is they'll say, you know going in how much time you have. But you don't really want to look at the clock. You want to have a real conversation. But then somebody, a publicist, will cut in on another line or something and say, okay, 1 minute or, last question.
Right. I got you. I just want people to know behind the scenes, when you're talking to Morgan Freeman, that just doesn't happen every day. Bill Goodykoontz, Goody at the Movies, just got out of seeing Frozen, which comes out next month. The Counselor comes out today, right?
It does.
And?
It's not as good as it should be. It should be great. I mean, it's got Ridley Scott direction. It's Cormac McCarthy, great writer. It's his first screenplay. Other movies have been made of his books, like No Country for Old Men, is great. But this is the first time he's actually written, a movie. And it's just not, it's too convoluted, and it's just too many plot holes. And
great cast. Great cast.
It's fantastic. It's like Michael Fassbender, Brad Pitt,
Javier Bardem.
Penelope Cruz. Cameron Diaz. And Cameron Diaz is kind of funny. But it's not that they're bad. It's just that the story just never really goes anywhere. And it is, as with all Cormac McCarthy stuff, it's like insanely violent eventually. But they're really into McCarthy stuff. But his violence in books, at least, is almost like poetic or something, which sounds kind of a weird thing to say about, cutting somebody's head off or something. But it's the way that he describes it. And it's not that it's bad. It's just that with the people involved, you would think, wow, this has got to be one of the best movies of the year. And it's not.
It's painful. I have some sports stuff for you, but I have to ask, if you were to choose, and we're talking with Bill Goodykoontz, Goody at the Movies. Goody joins us every week here on the show. What would you rather watch this weekend, The Counselor or Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa?
Well, they didn't screen Jackass. I'd rather see that. I'd like to see it. It's getting good reviews elsewhere.
Yeah? And that's what you're hearing? But they didn't screen it, though, huh?
No, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't screen it here. They screened it in some places. I don't know why they didn't screen it here. But I think they're always afraid of bad reviews for stuff like that. But the Jackass guys have always, I thought Johnny Knoxville, he's a lot smarter than he seems. And now as soon as that comes out of my mouth, it's like, well, he'd have to be smarter than he seems. But I think there's a brain behind that. When there was a TV show and I was a TV critic, I used to give it good notices. That's one of those instances where they say, don't try this at home, that they really mean it.
Right.
But some of the stuff they did, it was entertaining. David Letterman is a TV genius for doing it. And I don't know if you remember his old show on NBC that came on after the Tonight Show. But he would do all those crazy things, like wear a Velcro suit and get thrown against a Velcro wall.
Sure.
He almost passed out when he wore an Alka-Seltzer suit and they dumped him in water.
No, it's like they would take the Sparkletts water bottles back in the day, and he'd fill them all up, the 5-gallon bad boys, and throw them off the top story of the building just to see them explode. I mean,
yeah, or drop a watermelon.
Like. Yeah, watermelons were a big deal. Absolutely, there's nothing. There's no
Letterman is legitimately a genius, but I'm not saying Johnny Knoxville is, but I'm saying that there's a place for stuff like Jack, at least in my view.
Okay, so, those are the two movies I want to get to with you. I do want to ask you, and we have a few minutes here that we can get into this. So the World Series ratings are dreadful once again. They were below double digits last night. I'm fine with that. I watched the World Series. I can't handle Tim McCarver anymore. And I've had a hard time with Tim McCarver the last few years. I don't know how many times I need a reference to Bob Gibson in the 1960s that something recollects to Bob Gibson, but that's what I'm getting. Is there anything for you on the World Series coverage?
I watch it, and I make my kids watch it, and I've never been a big Buck and McCarver fan, but you say you can't take it anymore. You're at most only going to have to take it for 5 more games because he's retiring after the end after the end of the series. There was a time and a place for him. I think it's past. You're right. He makes those references more than he used to.
Yes.
The knock on McCarver is always, ask him what time it is, and he tells you how the watch works. He's just too much detail, that stuff that even baseball fans don't really care about. The guy that used to crack me up, that made me think of something, is when Jim Palmer used to be an analyst, you talk about how McCarver's always talking about how Bob Gibson did this and Bob Gibson did that. Jim Palmer always talked about how Jim Palmer did this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hilarious. At first it bugged me, and then I started liking it just to see, and I think Jim Palmer's a great pitcher. I mean, no question about it. But it was just funny to see, how much of his own horn is he going to blow here? But, Buck is good at what he does, and there are not too many people that can call as he did last year, you know, a World Series game in the afternoon and or a football game in the afternoon and a World Series game at night. But he's got a smugness to him that I don't think always wears well. Doesn't always sound as cool as he, I think you want.
Here's the thing on that, okay, because I think you're onto something here. And by the way, I'll just say this, and this isn't me being smug. I don't think calling an NFL game and a World Series game on the same day would be that difficult. And what's my point of reference? I did a college game and a pro game back in San Diego on the same day, football. And you just had to catch a flight and get from one place to the next, and you have everybody there to help you out. Not on the same scale, but I think that for professional announcers, it's a lot easier now. When I hear on game day, oh my gosh, Kirk Herbstreit's in Georgia, and then that afternoon he's at College Station, Texas. He has a limo waiting for him. He has a private jet waiting for him. He has a limo on the other side waiting for him. It's not that hard. It really isn't. But I'll say on Buck's part, Bill, he's been doing it now because he started so young. He was, what, 23 when he first got the gig?
Yeah, and he's the number one. Well, but there's this. He is the number one play-by-play guy for both sports, and that's pretty unusual.
No,
but nobody carries baseball anymore. So
nobody watches baseball, but I think that he's been around for so long that there's a level of fatigue with him. I like him in football. I'm not big on the baseball thing, and I think it's probably just the analyst that he's with at this point.
Yeah, I wonder what he'd be like, and I wonder what he will be like next year with somebody, and who knows who will get that job, because, you know, but you wonder if somebody that was a little more contemporary and did that. I say I don't like Buck that much. Sometimes I like him, sometimes I don't. You know, you got to say this for him. He's the son of a legendary broadcaster.
Yes.
And he did not, even though he went into the same business, he didn't take the same path. He's a completely different kind of play-by-play guy than his father was.
And his father was a terrific man. I loved having him on shows, and I loved visiting with him at ballparks. He was very nice. And that's not the case with those guys sometimes. Sometimes those guys on the outside look really great, and you get to know him, and it's, geez, oh, man, I don't want to deal with this guy again. He's a nightmare.
Yeah, because they don't want to deal with you, has been my experience a lot of the time.
Yeah.
They start to believe believe their press clippings.
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate it.
Sure, thank you.
Stay well. Bill Goodykuhn's Goody at the Movies every week here on the show, having some fun with Bill Goodykuhn's. You can follow me on Twitter, @BradSesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Get over there on Twitter. I'll be there throughout the weekend with what's on my mind, things that I see. And sometimes it's just a little different. It's not the same old, boy, that was a great block by the left guard. Yeah, no kidding. He gained 20 yards. It's not that hard. Sometimes it's, well, I think it was last week, some people at the Cardinals game came up and were kind of mad at me because I said the person who's jumping up and down the most watching this Cardinals-Seahawks game is Tony Gonzalez because he knows he's going to kill the Cardinals the following week. What happens? Our website, sports360az.com, sports360az.com. A lot of content there. 3 high school football games tonight, which will be a lot of fun. I'm Brad Sesmat.